Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, very much. Well, I have to say, it's a great pleasure and a privilege to be here with you this morning, something of a surprise to see so many former inmates here this morning, but your secret is safe with me. But I'm really grateful that you've actually come, because it is definitely the sort of morning where the alarm goes and you think that duvet feels particularly attractive, doesn't it? You just want to sort of hide under it. So well done for actually coming. It's actually really good that you've made time to be here, because life just gets so crazily busy. Every minute seems to count, so much so that if you kind of think about prisoners in Brixton Prison, you might actually feel a little bit of envy for them. Just think of all those duvet days. Loads of time just to sort of sit in their cell. They get their meals made for them. They go down off the landings to sort of queue and pick up their tray of food, and then they take that back up to their cell and they have their food in there. They don't have to wash up. They don't have to deal with the pots and pans. It almost sounds a bit like a kind of welcome break. Sounds quite appealing. But just in case you're beginning to sort of plot and scheme your way in, yeah, just banish those thoughts. I can assure you that if I showed you around, if I took you along to Brixton Prison, showed you around, there's no way that you would swap your freedom for their time. Prison actually is a very uncomfortable, often a frightening place. In Brixton, all the sort of gangs of South London are represented. So there's always a kind of a jockeying for position. Who's going to be the top dog? Each gang wants to be the top dog, so every now and again sort of fights break out between these gangs. And if something terrible happens to one gang on the outside, that then gets kind of avenged on the inside. Now, not everybody in the prison belongs to gangs, but a non-gang member on a wing may not join in with all of this. But he'll have to wear a mask that says, "Don't touch me, yeah, don't cross me. Don't mess with me." A while ago, I was sitting down with a man that I'd known for several years. And before he came in to the prison, he was a boxer. And he was a big kind of lump of a man. And we were chatting about this and that. And he said to me, "Phil, I haven't said this to anyone before, but I'm not a hard man. I look like a hard man. I act like a hard man, but that's just the way I have to operate in here to survive." He said, "I'd much rather give someone a kind of a cuddle than a clump, but I just have to have that kind of bearing in here. So it can be a frightening place, and you have to kind of play the game." So while they may have loads of time on their hands, it's not a very pleasant place to spend it. It can be a frightening place. And prisons are a place of huge disappointment. I remember being called by the staff onto C Wing in Brixton. That's our induction wing, so people get convicted, and that's our sort of first few nights centre. And the staff wanted me to see someone who spent his first ever day in prison grabbing all sorts of headlines. He spent the day kind of lashing out at staff and smashing up his cell. And they asked me to come over and have a chat with him. So I opened his cell flap, looked through a little spy hole, and introduced myself and said, "You know, do you fancy a chat?" And he said, "Yes, I do." So I let myself in and we sat on his bed together, looking at the walls that were decorated with that day's food and sort of tiptoeing over his broken furniture on the floor. And I said to him, "It's clear you haven't had the best of days." And he just broke down in tears. And all this disappointment flooded out. He told me that for 26 and a half of his 28 years, his father had been in prison. His dad had been a big gangland figure, And so his surname, as he was growing up, brought a fair amount of kind of kudos in the area. But he was actually brought up by other members of his family. His dad obviously was otherwise engaged. His mother was a heroin addict. And so he was actually brought up by kind of uncles and aunts who were a really law-abiding, lovely bunch. And they showered him with love and affection. They valued his education. And they did all the right things for him. And he was actually set on a really positive path. And then he just went and did something that was really stupid. And he got himself arrested, and he was looking at doing a few years behind bars. And his dominant feeling was disappointment. He'd become the very person that he'd spent his life trying not to be. He was thinking about his aunts, his uncles, those people who brought him up, and he knew that he'd let them down. And he just could not cope with the disappointment. So he spent his day kind of lashing up, smashing up, and just generally getting it all off his chest. But you know the most poignant thing about his cell, and it's the same with every cell in any prison across the country. It's not the food on the walls, it's not the broken furniture. The thing that is most poignant is that when that heavy metal cell door slams shut, it's just a clear sheet of metal. There's no handle on the inside. There's just a small little spy hole and a flap on the outside so that people can look in to make sure you haven't self-harmed, you're not trying to hang yourself, things like that. So this door that's just a sheet of metal is just a symbol of that helplessness. They can do absolutely nothing to sort of look after themselves, to organise their own lives. They have no freedom. And the reason why I love prison ministry is that I can introduce them to the one person who can turn their fear into joy and their total incarceration into the deepest freedom. On the chapel wall at Brixton Prison, there's a plaque with a verse from the Bible on it. It's from our Old Testament reading in Isaiah that we had read earlier on. And it's a great verse to have on a plaque on a prison chapel wall, because Isaiah was speaking ahead into a time when God's people were being punished. They had disobeyed God, and God had allowed them to be wrenched from the land that they loved, and they were held sort of prisoners. They were held captive in exile. And this is what the verse on the plaque says. This is what God, in fact, has to say to any of his people facing a difficult situation. He says this: "Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, and you are mine." You can see why it's such a good verse to have on a prison chapel wall. All of those men have been wrenched away from the things that make life worth living, often through no fault but their own. Yet God gives them three reasons why they need not fear. And the first reason, I'll spend longer on this reason than the other two. The first reason why his people facing that kind of situation need not fear is this: "Fear not, says God, for I have redeemed you." Now, redeemed is a sort of Bible word, so let me try to explain it. I want you to imagine, when I explain this story in Brixton, they don't have to much of a leap of imagination, but I want you to imagine that you're in a courtroom. We're in a big, kind of like the Old Bailey's number one court. I'm the judge. I'm sat up behind a big desk. I've got my wig on, looking all very stern. Where Steve is this sort of prosecutor. I've got a clerk here. We've got a defendant here in the dock. And up here, big public gallery. And the gallery is absolutely rammed with family and friends of the defendant, family and friends of the victims, Also the press, it's quite a high profile court case. So here we are in the courtroom, the court clerk here stands up to address the court, and it's a long list of crimes that this defendant is being convicted of. And upstairs in the gallery, the journalists are writing down the pens. You can hear the pens scratching. You hear the clerk talking. You can hear a bit of kind of unease as the defendant's friends and the victim's friends are in the same area. Is it all going to kick off? And defendant standing there just thinking, what am I going to get for all of this? And then the judge clears his throat. The clerk sits down. And he looks at the defendant and he passes the longest, heaviest sentence within his powers to pass. And the defendant kind of wobbles a little bit. The journalists, they're shocked. Their pens stop on the page for a moment. And the defendant's friends gasp and the victim's friends cheer. And then it all kind of settles down again and all eyes turn to the judge because the judge kind of clears his throat. And then the judge removes his wig and people think, what on earth is happening? Then the judge walks around his desk down the steps into the body of the court. And he approaches the defendant. He opens the door to the guard, he's flanked by officers. But he leads the defendant away. And the judge himself puts out his hands to be handcuffed. And he stands in the cell. And the judge himself is led away down to the cells to start the sentence.
Now, the men of Brixton are always very disappointed that that didn't happen in their case. But while it's quite easy, isn't it, to imagine one of the Brixton prisoners standing in a courtroom, the Bible tells us that you and I stand in God's dock. We stand in his courtroom. See, the story is told of a family in America at the turn of the last but one century. And they were a very poor family, but they worked really, really hard. Lovely family. And the parents worked on a little farm and they saved everything they possibly could to send the boy to school. It was obvious that he was really bright and had a great future ahead of him. So they scrimped and saved and they sent him off to school. And eventually off he went to college. And the parents were so proud. Their son had a chance for this kind of better life. They'd lavished everything on him. And so John, off he goes to college and he writes home with all the news and the parents are thrilled with this. This is fantastic. This is exactly what they wanted. And they write back. So they spent every day kind of waiting. Is there going to be a letter the next day? And for a while there was. They would be in regular contact. And then John, he just gets into the swing of college and the letters stop. And the parents are just kind of beside themselves thinking, what's happened? Is he all right? So the father decides that the only thing he could possibly do for his sanity is to visit the college. And so he spruces himself up as best he can. And off he goes in his pony and trap. And he sets off, finds his way to the town where the college was. And there he asks around, where are my son's lodgings? And he's led to this particular place. And when he's outside the house, he can hear the sort of sound of music. There's a bit of a party going on. And he goes up the stairs and he knocks on the door. Has to knock quite loud because, just so much happy noise. And then he hears the voice of his son saying, come in. So he opens the door full of expectation. And there's a good melee of people. In the middle, there's John. And the old man, the father, looks at him and says, John. And the son looks back at him, looks his father in the eye and says, I'm really sorry, but there's been some mistake. I just don't know who you are. Well, it's a story of terrible ingratitude
isn't it? But if you want to understand the cross and the great act of redemption brought about by Jesus Christ, you need to realize that that is how you and I naturally treat God. You and I were designed to live in friendship with him. He lavishes good things on us. Yet naturally, we live as though God were either dead or irrelevant. And God can't be like that doting uncle that I had when I was growing up. When I did something that he knew would upset my parents, he would kind of wink at me and say, "Oh, boys will be boys." God can't be like that. If he's a holy and just God, he has to punish sin. But he's a merciful God. And he himself took the punishment on the cross for our sin at the first Easter. And if we trust in that, we're led out of God's dock and we enter a friendship with him. And he himself is punished for our rebellion. So fear not, says God, to those people who trust in him, for I have redeemed you. And then fear not, for I've called you by name. Every evening at Brixton Prison, vans swing through the gates. The men call the vans sweat boxes because they're usually about kind of six cubicles, just about room for you to kind of lean back on a ledge in the summer, really hot and very sweaty. And one by one, the men get kind of led off into a holding cell and they wait there to be processed. They have their picture taken and they're given a number, an ID card with their photo on and their number. See, everyone in prison has not just a name. The name is almost irrelevant. What you need is the number to identify yourself. So many people in the prison system, there may be more than one John Smith at a time. So they need a number. In fact, the number is all that I need to know about that person. That number defines them. Now, you and I are not defined by a number, but the world around you wants to slap a label on you. Some will just see you as a mum, or as a dad, or as a single person, or a rich person, or a poor person, or a beautiful person, or a not-so-beautiful person, as fat, as thin, as healthy, as sick, and the list can go on. And some of these labels build us up, and other of these labels knock us down and disappoint. Each of our lives, if we look inwards, they've just got pockets, haven't they, of disappointment. Things that are a way that we wish that they weren't. And we can feel powerless to change them. From time to time, we might make a determined effort to change. We might make a New Year's resolution to change this or that. But by this stage in January, it's probably all gone the shape of the pear. But God says to those who he has redeemed, I've called you by name. I know you. I know everything there is to know about you. I don't call you by those characteristics or by any label, or by any number. I call you by name. Friends, when the men of Brixton Prison come to realize that, it is liberating. They're not only redeemed by God, the past is dealt with, but they're liberated by God. They become the person that he designed them to be. And it can be no less liberating for you. Fear not, says God, for I have redeemed you. I've dealt with your sin. Fear not, I've called you by name. No longer in a prison, it would be something like A4256AQ, but a man in a cell known by name. And for us, no longer mum, dad, rich, poor, beautiful, not beautiful, etc., but called by name. And finally, God says in his reasons to have no fear, "Fear not, for you are mine." A few years ago, we'd finished a holiday in Devon. We always go to holiday in Devon. And our oldest boy, he was sort of a youngish teenager at that stage, said, "Dad, please, next summer, can we go somewhere where it doesn't rain?" So I said, "Well, yeah, okay, here's the budget. You're good on a computer. Go and you find us something. Don't mind where it is. If you think it's going to be sunny, that's where we'll go." So he did some research, and he found us this little flat in Croatia, right next to the water. And from our sort of balcony, you could see the water and just a pavement between us and that. And it was absolutely beautiful. The water was so clear. And the kids spent all day, every day, diving down to the bottom and getting shells. And so my wife and I could just read, chat. It was absolutely lovely. And at the end of the day, they'd have brought up all these shells and laid them out on the kitchen table. And they were so exhausted by all the swimming. By this stage, they were ready for bed. So you'd send them into bed. We'd have a whole evening. It was absolutely lovely. And we'd sweep up all the, once they were in bed, tucked up, we'd sweep up all the shells and we'd tiptoe back out and we'd throw them all back so that they have to do the same thing the next day. So we had lots and lots of fun. When it got to the end of the holiday, the kids said, "Well, look, can we take some shells home?" I said, "Of course you can." So we walked about and we found sort of shoe boxes and little boxes and got loo roll and stuffed them in there. And they picked their favourite few shells and spent hours choosing which one they were going to take. Anyway, they took their shells. They each had a little box and they had their sort of luggage to take on the plane, hand luggage. But they also had this little box. And each of them went through customs, cradling this thing. And there were crowds in the airport. You know, they were going to protect them. Nothing was going to happen to their shells. And sure enough, we got all the way back home and these shells were intact. Those shells kind of became theirs, their kind of treasured possession. Actually, if we read on in our Isaiah reading, God says, not only are you mine, but you're my treasure possession. If we come to know him, we don't just belong to him as something that could be a bit of junk that he's putting up with. We belong to him as his treasured possession, and he will take us home. Now, I'm going to stop in a moment, but earlier on I mentioned the sort of cell doors in all the cells in the prisons across the country. They've got this kind of sheet of metal on this side, just a spy hole, and the handle's on the other side, so that staff can let themselves in and out and let the guy in and out. But I want to close by telling you about another door. And that is the door to the human heart, to your heart and to my heart. There's a painting, I'm sure you've heard about it, we may have done, by a chap called Holman Hunt, and which illustrates a statement and a promise made by Jesus in the Bible. Steve read it to us earlier. It goes like this: "I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him or her, and he or she with me. I'll say it again. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come in and eat with him or her, and he or she with me." And Holman's Hunt's painting is as poignant as a cell door in Brixton. Because again, it's a door depicted as having just one handle. On the outside of the door is the figure of Jesus holding a lamp, knocking on the door. It's obvious that the door has never been opened. It's all covered up with ivy and other sort of bits and pieces. You can tell it's never been opened. And the other striking thing about it is that it doesn't have a handle on Jesus' side. The handle is on the inside. Only you can open it. And he is calling you. You may, even this morning, sense that knock. He's calling you by name. And if you hear his voice, it's only you who can open that door. Jesus is no burglar. I've met loads of burglars, and Jesus is not one of them. But I can tell you of loads of burglars and murderers and robbers and all sorts who've heard Jesus' voice. They've heard the knock and they've grabbed that handle and they've opened the door of their hearts to him. And he hasn't just come as a kind of quick visit, but he's taken up permanent residence. They've been redeemed. God has called them by name, and they belong to him, not as a bit of junk tucked away somewhere, but as a treasured possession. And the same can be true for you. It's not compulsory. Only you can open the door. So do you hear the knock? Can you hear his voice? Will you grab that handle and open it and let him in? Jesus stands now outside, longing to redeem you. Will you open the door? If you do, you'll join the men I come to know and love in Brixton Prison who have nothing to fear. You'll have been redeemed. You'll have been called by name, not by those labels that sometimes build you up, other times knock you down. You'll have been called by name and you'll belong to him. You'll be his treasured possession. Now, it may well be that what I've said this morning raises more questions than it's answered. And if so, hopefully you were given one of these leaflets about the Christianity Explored course that is about to start. George was talking about it earlier. We run it in Brixton Prison. It's a brilliant course because what it does is gives you the building blocks that we need to understand to help us to understand who God is like, what we're like, and how to get to know him. But it's not a series of lectures. It's a process of exploration. You bring your questions and they can be discussed. So do think about signing up. There is a daytime one if evenings are no good for you. There's a daytime Christianity Explore course as well as an evening course. So do sign up with have a chat with Steve afterwards. Also, on your way out, Steve invites you please to take with you a Bible. It's completely free of charge. Do take it away and read it. George mentioned the eyewitness accounts, and he's a historian who's looked at these and wrestled with it and come to realise that actually it's not just words on a page, but it's almost a kind of love letter from God to you saying, come in, let me into your heart. So do pick up a little Bible, do take away the leaflet, have a chat with Steve about signing up. Because God, I can tell you for sure, just longs to say to you, fear not. I don't know anything about your backgrounds, but you do. Whatever you're facing, God can say to you, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I've called you by name, and you are mine. Can I pray for you before I sit down? Jesus, we do thank you that you have paid the price for our living as though you were either dead or irrelevant, that you've taken that punishment, and you stand outside the door of our hearts and you knock. And I pray that you would enable us to open that door, maybe just a little bit to start with, and realize that everything you've said about what's on offer and knowing you is true, that will become your treasured possession. For those who are just not sure, I pray that they would
realize this is worth exploring and that you would enable them to sign up for the Christianity Explore course due to start. Realize that they're not expected to know any of the answers. That's the purpose of coming. Nothing embarrassing will take place, just a look at who you are, why you came, and what it means to follow you. But it may be that there's someone here this morning who's just thinking, hang on, I've done some thinking, and this really is for me. This is the time to open that door. And I pray for that person that as they open the door now, that you would come in and eat with him or her, take up residence, and that this church family would be a place where they could grow in their knowledge and love of you, delighting in the fact that they belong to you. You don't just tolerate them, don't put up with them, but they're your treasured possession. And I thank you for that person. And I pray for us as a church family that we would delight in knowing you, delight in making you known. And we thank you. In Jesus' name.